is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we're exploring theology through the lens of a galaxy far, far away. From belief to redemption, orthodoxy to resurrection, the Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes, and hey, we are going to crack them wide open. Hopefully, this can be of help to you on your journey of faith, or at the very least, can enhance your appreciation for the galaxy we all know and love. I'm your host, Jared Mays, and joining me once again this week is the wrecker of our dad batch, Scott Howland. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing okay. That's probably more apt than even you realize. My wife says I'm the clumsiest person on the planet, so...
Oh, that's great. He might be my favorite, so that's, you know, showing my hand here a little bit. Not to put down our other guest host.
I'm honored.
Dr. Kevin Burr, the tech of our crew, maybe. I don't know.
Guys, it's great to be here again. Glad to do this with y'all another time. It'll be a lot of fun.
I'm wondering if in this analogy who this makes me. I don't know if I'm hunter, just because I'm redneck, you know, and yeah, I've hunted things with a bandana tied around my head once or twice, but like no more than three times.
Does being from Oklahoma qualify you as a redneck if you live in Massachusetts?
What qualifies me as a redneck is the fact that so many things in my house are held together by duct tape.
Now that is
and
true.
I own duct tape in like, I almost said flavors, and all kinds of different colors and styles. I've got Arkansas Razorback duct tape. I've got Star Wars duct tape. I've got space duct tape, for crying out loud. I've got black duct tape. Sometimes you need things to be duct taped in black. I've got white duct tape, though, because sometimes you need it to look fancy.
Well, duct tape was invented by NASA, so space duct tape would be appropriate.
Oh, is it really? I didn't know that.
I believe it was invented by NASA.
Well, if it wasn't, I believe you. So we'll go from there. You know what wasn't invented by NASA, however? This brand new show that has just hit Disney Plus. Guys, I want to ask, this is not a review episode of The Bad Batch. I almost called it The Dad Batch again that time. Now, this is not a review episode of The Bad Batch. So, Scott, I'm gonna keep you to 1 minute here. Can you give a one-minute review of your initial impressions of the show? You've watched it, right?
Yes, I've saw it, and I've seen both episodes, and I really enjoyed it. It's not groundbreaking. I get the same kind of sense as Rebels, and so it's. I'm looking forward to some of the stuff they've starting to lay down already. So, very optimistic, very positive and optimistic about it.
Good, yeah. It's one of those things where, obviously, the first episode was 70 minutes, but then after that, the next one was 24. So, I'm really looking forward to it. If we've got 24-minute episodes. Looking forward to binging those over a weekend. Can't wait for a really good head cold to keep me on the couch for like 48 hours so I can watch this whole thing. How about you, Kevin? Have you seen Bad Batch?
Oh, man, no. I haven't yet. I've got this thing about starting new shows. My wife asked me just the other day, so when are we going to start Bad Batch? And I was like, oh, I don't want to do it yet because I'm not ready to invest all that emotional energy into another... I need to recover from Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Probably next week or so we'll jump into it. I'm excited to know that the first episode is 70 minutes, though.
It
That's
is.
Exciting.
Yeah. I watched it twice in a weekend. Oh. So, I mean, it was like, what were my plans for the weekend? I just watched that show.
I was almost disappointed when the second episode was 22 minutes or 24 minutes or whatever it was.
I was actually relieved because really I only had like a little snippet of my afternoon before my kids woke up. And I was like, okay, good. It's almost over. I actually went to pause it and said, I'm just going to have to watch the second half later and then realized there were 30 seconds left. So I was actually grateful for that. I was talking to a friend about it today and actually another minister friend, my buddy Caleb Borchers in Rhode Island. And Caleb gave this incredible analogy. He said, the thing about these Dave Filoni shows... You got, Clone Wars and Rebels and Mandalorian and now Bad Batch. He's like, you know how it's a Filoni show? Just if it's got a kid in it. Hey, let's do Star Wars, but let's stick a kid in it.
It's on brand.
Like, it's kind of becoming a storytelling trope. It's like, all right, we're going to have, these warriors and this crew of Jedis and clone troopers and a crew full of this mismatched group of misfits and then a kid. Yeah, one more. Just stick a kid in there, and that'll be the dynamic that we need. And, yeah, I don't know if it's totally going to ruin me on the show at this point. That's all I'm going to see. But let's hope not. Let's hope not.
I hadn't considered that before, but that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, yeah.
Not to spoil it for you or anything, Kevin, but, you know, there's a kid somewhere.
No, I haven't watched them, but I've seen the videos on YouTube for, you know, hey, here's this kid. What does he mean? 37 Easter eggs. Yeah, stuff like that. It's like, okay.
Hold yourself back. Yeah.
Watch it
first. Close down your YouTube browser, also known as just a web browser, a YouTube browser. Is that a thing?
Safari, Chrome.
Well, I'm going to stop talking and hand it over to Scott here. Scott, this is your week to choose the episode's topic.
So I was thinking a lot, and I think this is kind of what sparked part of this whole podcast endeavor is our conversation about Han Solo and how his journey from a complete non-believer in the Force, thinking it's even just a myth, it's not even anything that's real, to a complete, you know, as he says in The Force Awakens, it's all real, it's all true, everything you've heard is true, and that journey and you know, how much he believes throughout the whole way, and how that is actually mimicked a lot in the Bible with a lot of the disciples of Jesus and stuff.
Sure. Yeah, this is definitely a topic I'm excited about. Let's start with the Han at the beginning of his journey. Let's start there in A New Hope.
Just Star Wars.
Or as you like to call it, just Star Wars. In A New Hope, let's talk about Han's character and the role that he plays as a skeptic. Help me remember exactly what Han says. It's in the conversation with old Ben Kenobi. I like to call him old Krusty Ben. Alec Guinness there on the ship on Millennium Falcon talking to, you know, Luke is, what, he got the blast helmet on and trying to shoot down the little laser blast from the remote. Freaking love that thing. I want one so bad that'll just blast me whenever
I don't know
say
if you really
stupid.
Do or not.
Of course. Yeah, that's called my wife is what it is. No. The fact of the matter is Han kind of has his hands behind his head, his feet kicked back on the table, and he says, I've been from one side of this galaxy to the other, and I've seen a lot of strange stuff, but I've never seen anything, like, I've never seen an all-powerful force
I've never
that
seen
can
anything
control
that,
my destiny? That, is that right? I'm close.
Oh, crap. I just thought about that. I've never seen anything that make me believe that there's one overriding force that controls the entire world.
Yeah.
Or universe or galaxy or whatever he says. Yeah.
We're close. We're close. I'm sure that our listeners are screaming at us in their cars or walking the dog.
Yep.
Don't scare the neighbors, everybody. We're not trying to be precise here. We're just trying to get close enough where you know what we're talking about. You want to help us out, Kevin? Have we gotten it close enough?
I think we've gotten the gist of it. He's dismissive for sure. Yeah.
You know,
didn't he call it hocus pocus at one point?
Hokey. I know he says hokey religions and ancient blasters.
Are no
ancient weapons. Now we're gonna actually have to play the clip in the show.
Yes.
They're no match for a good blaster at your side, kid. There it is. On the one hand, Han's initial accusation there. That he's never seen an all-powerful force that can control his destiny. It kind of reminds me of some conversations that I've had with skeptical friends who have said, I've never met a god, I've never encountered a god who... I don't believe in a god who would control the way that I live. I don't believe in a god
who's always looking over my shoulder, who called it the magic sky man. You know, they're dismissive in that fashion as well. You know, almost like, hand waving, you know, whatever. You know, like very dismissive of it. So I've actually experienced a lot of that stuff firsthand from people.
Sure. Yeah. And my response to that is often, I don't believe in that God either, right? I don't believe in a God who's just looking over your shoulder, waiting to punish you at any moment or just to solve problems with miracles. I believe in a very different God than that. Okay, we've got a quote here, Kevin. You've looked it up. Help us out. What's it say?
So I put it here for us to see. Kid, I've flown from one side of this galaxy to the other. I've seen a lot of strange stuff, but I've never seen anything to make me believe that there's one all-powerful force controlling everything. There's no mystical energy field that controls my destiny.
All right, I got the first half, word for word, and then pretty much botched the second half. So it sounds like my Greek scores, doesn't it? Oh, goodness.
I am not allowed to comment on
that. So here we are thinking about the fact that Han, on the one hand, is right. Does the Force control people's destiny? Is this all that the
Force
is?
On, in my opinion, it depends on a lot of what you've seen in the movies and stuff. There's a theory about why even... I've seen somebody after watching Rogue One had explained that, well, the Force protects people that it needs to protect to get things done. Like when you see Chewie have to bring the thing out to the and he's chanting, "The Force is with me, I am with the Force," you know, and so he's fine until he gets there, and then he gets shot by the stormtroopers. So they had said the Force even helps the stormtroopers with the bad aim, you know. They were trying to be dismissive of poor aim and everything like that. Being protect.
So that's the reason the
Force,
for the stormtroopers,
having
aim
its
is
own
the
will to say, okay, he needs to get here to do X, Y, and Z. You know, so that's the closest I've seen to the Force having any kind of will of its own, not to take over the Force of the Wills that George Lucas originally was calling Star Wars.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of Force lore surrounding, you know, you've got the unifying Force and the living Force, and I can never remember exactly.
And the cosmic Force.
Separate the two.
I had just
the
watched.
Force.
I had
no,
just
I think
watched
that's the same
the,
as the unifying Force.
The episodes with Yoda trying to on his vision quest that we talked about. I had never actually seen
until we
had talked about it, so I actually went back and watched those. And then they were talking about how there was different forces, almost, you know, the living Force and the cosmic Force that binds everything together. And so I found it interesting that they kind of were chopping it up a little into pieces.
Yeah. And one perspective on that is the living Force is this energy field that Yoda talks about that binds us and surrounds us and penetrates us, and it's the rock, it's the tree. But the cosmic Force has a will of its own, can intervene from time to time and cause individuals to take certain actions in order to course correct. And can we compare that to our conception of God? To what degree does God step in and control our actions versus to what degree do we as humans have free will? Now, on the one hand, I want to take issue with Han's skepticism here. We're going to talk about skepticism and faith and doubt. But I do wonder if this is a common conception that people have of God. I wonder if you could just almost take word for word Han's quote here and apply it to modern Americans' perception of God. I've never seen a mystical God that controls my destiny. How can we compare this to God? Is this what God does? Does he just control our destinies, or do we have more free will than that?
I'm interested in the fact that did Chewie chew off Han's ear about the Jedi, because he actually fought alongside the Jedi. Like you would have some friends who
I don't overthink it, Scott.
There are some friends out there who wax poetic about some religious topics and stuff. So I've always been curious about that.
Yeah, I just imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
Han says,
"Yeah,
exactly.
Right, like he hears
Shut
all
up,
these
Chewie.
Stories, and you know, so."
I love this in this analogy. Chewie's the
laugh it
he's
up,
the evangelistic friend. And it's not so different from Chirrut and Baze, is it? In Rogue One, you know, Chirrut's the believer and Baze is the skeptic. Spoiler alert there. Baze is converted in the end, just in time.
It's not always
blown up. Did you want to weigh in on this one, Kevin?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about will and things related to that. Those are absolutely massive questions.
Yeah.
And The other side of that spectrum tends to be termed like predestination or something along those lines. The short answer is this. The Apostle Paul, as a Pharisee, right, as someone who grew up as a Pharisee, learning Israel scripture through that lens that the Pharisees taught and lived in their own lives, they believed in some degree of predestination. They also believed humans had some degree of free will as well. They held both in tension. They recognized, for example, that Israel was predestined, and they also recognized that people did have freedom to choose righteousness, to choose wickedness.
So a corporate sense of predestination and an individual sense of free will. Now, it's reductionistic.
But I don't think that's inappropriate. Okay. Yeah, I think that that's knowing that that's not our main point of discussion
right.
tonight.
Yeah. Just in a nutshell.
I think that's fair. I think it's fair to put it that way.
Right. You know, the point in all of this is, hey, Han makes this blanket statement that I've never seen this kind of a force. And then over time, he comes to realize, maybe the force isn't exactly what I initially conceived of it to be. Maybe there was more to it than I initially had written off, and I was surprised by what I discovered in the spiritual realm. No, he'd never seen a mystical energy field that controls his destiny, because that's not really all that the force was trying to do in his life. The force instead was manifested in a friend. The force was manifested in hope. The force was manifested in a son who wouldn't give up on his father, right? And so Han eventually, by the time we get to The Force Awakens, has had an awakening. I wonder exactly what was the Force Awakening in The Force Awakens? What if it was Han's faith all along? No, it's probably something else having to do with Rey. I don't know. I don't totally get it. But how do you think Han gets there? Now, I wanted to get this first point out of the way that oftentimes our initial blanket statements don't really do us any good. And being dismissive, I would encourage people to engage with their doubt and ask critical questions rather than just to be dismissive. But then from there, how do you think Han gets to that point in The Force Awakens? What do we have, 36 years passing between A New Hope and The Force Awakens? What transpires in your minds? Obviously, in the expanded universe, not much of that story has been told yet between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. So in your mind, what had to change in Han?
Maybe it was his relationship with Leia. Maybe it was what happened to his son. There are several aspects there that you can think that may have been had a lot to do with that kind of thing. In Jedi, at the beginning of Jedi, when he's told the plan of Luke coming to save him, he's like, "What is this?" He's got these grand delusions of being some great Jedi. It's like, he still doesn't, I don't think, fully believes at that point, in the overarching force.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I guess even in the original trilogy, we don't totally see that transformation taking place. He clearly believes in Luke. The fact that he's grateful that Luke has come along with him on this infiltration mission to Endor, but that's different than believing in the Force, isn't it? How about you, Kevin? What do you think happened in Han between A New Hope and The Force Awakens?
Yeah. I think Scott has hit the nail on the head here, that Han does have these transforming relationships, that his time around Luke, seeing the kinds of things that he saw, that we know he saw, at least in the movie canon. He's seen these things. He's been exposed to these people that he obviously through a handful, right, of life and death situations in a relatively short amount of time, when you take into the account a lifetime, right, you know, from A New Hope to the end of Return of the Jedi, it's a relatively short amount of time when you take into account somebody's entire lifetime. In a relatively short amount of time, he has come to know these people. And, you know, yeah, he makes this quip about Luke having delusions of grandeur and all that stuff. But he's seen Luke. But I think Scott, you particularly mentioned his relationship with Leia. He knows that he trusts Leia, and he sees that Leia trusts Luke. And I wonder if that is part of what paves the way for him. Also interesting, too, another point, kind of going back to what we had talked about just a second ago. When Obi-Wan is talking to Luke and describing the Force, Obi-Wan is talking to another believer.
Yeah, right.
He's talking to another believer, and Han happens to overhear. Yeah. Jared, you and I, and Scott, you too, we would all talk about the Bible and church things using, you know, kind of insider language or something like that. That's just any institution, right? You have, you know, insider language. I mean, y'all, just a second ago, we're talking about the living force and the unifying force and the cosmic force. That's insider language, right? That the average Star Wars fan isn't, or the casual Star Wars fan isn't necessarily going to pick up on, especially somebody who's never even seen Star Wars. Han at this point is not a believer. And so again, if the three of us were to talk to somebody about what it is we believe, I might not go for the most technical definitions,
right,
using Greek terminology from Trinitarian debates in the, you know, in the second and third centuries. You know, like, I wouldn't go for that kind of language. Obi-Wan is, though, in a sense, talking to an insider, a fellow insider.
I think it also kind of contrasts between Luke's rapid acceptance of it. You know, he hasn't even really seen any kind of Jedi tricks or anything like that, just the mind trick at Mos Eisley's. But he hasn't seen him float things, and he's only seen a lightsaber, from what we've seen, that one time. Yeah, he hasn't seen
any
of that stuff.
He hasn't even seen battle meditation yet.
Ready. Yeah. He's ready to believe. He's ready to be there. He's like, I'm all in. Come on, coach. You know, let's go. And Han is the exact opposite of that. I think that's part of what the story they're trying to get to as well.
Right. In the mythological blueprint of it all, I think Lucas has even gone on record saying that's the initial function that Han served in the story, was to be the skeptic as the foil for the wide-eyed farm boy who's ready to pick up the call to action and become the hero. Han, of course, then becomes a different kind of hero. He's morally gray with a heart of gold. You know, that's a certain trope in and of itself. But then by the time we get to The Force Awakens, he's transitioned into that Obi-Wan role, right? He is now mentoring Rey and Finn, bringing them along on the Falcon in this journey, you know, handing the baton, really, literally, to Rey. It's a little blaster. And as he does so, is a totally different mythological archetype in the story. And it's the same character for us, same actor even, with Harrison Ford portraying that role. And it goes to show just how much a person can be transformed. I wonder, though, about that mix of faith and doubt that we find in Han and Luke. So Luke, as you said so well there, Scott, Luke almost has blind faith. You're right. I mean, he has a story that he believes in with his father, which was false. It was a half truth.
From a certain point of view,
of course. And then he also has a Jedi mind trick. He has Ponda Baba's arm on the floor. That is, you know, proof that Obi-Wan is a deft swordsman with the lightsaber. And, you know, there's not a whole lot more. No, that's before they even get to the Death Star. That's really all he's got to go on, right? So we find Han then having his doubt right there side by side with Luke's faith on the ship. How does that, and they of course are an odd couple, they're teammates, they're friends, they're allies, but I think in some ways that serves as a good illustration for us for the fact that Han and Luke were able to maintain a friendship despite being opposites in their faith. I think for us as Christians, we often think about faith as this ultimate achievement, faith as the ultimate goal, as the ultimate good. And that the opposite of that would be mistrust of God, or the opposite of that would be doubt, you know, and so faith then is the opposite, is the banishment of any doubt. I know with certainty what I believe. But I have a really different perspective on faith and doubt, personally, and some of it's born out of experience. But I want to let you guys talk about this first. How can faith and doubt coexist in a person of belief, a person on their way to faith, a person on this journey of wanting to know God? Are faith and doubt opposites, in your opinion? Kevin, let's start with you.
If I end up going a route with this that y'all find unhelpful, or it's maybe more novel than kind of what you were shooting for, Jared,
well,
apologize.
That's the beauty of podcasts. If it's garbage, I'll just edit it out.
That's fair. I have been training myself and training the churches that I've worked with to think of faith as something that includes but is not limited to intellectual assent, you know, like intellectual affirmation of these core tenets. It includes that, but even beyond that, faith, in the way that the New Testament tends to use faith, is really something better understood as faithfulness, fidelity, allegiance, yeah, something along those lines. It is an intellectual assent that leads one to action. And I use the example of, you know, I have faith that I'm married, right? I believe that I'm married. I therefore act on those beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, I therefore live in such a way that demonstrates, you know, that I am married. I am what one would call faithfully married.
Every day you wake up and you choose to be married. Every day you wake up and show your love to your spouse.
Yeah, I choose to do the things for her and choose not to do other things, you know, for other women that, you know, that would be inappropriate for me to do with them, because for the simple fact that they're not my wife. And so in that sense, I don't think faith, if that's how I'm defining faith, in that sense, I don't think faith is the total opposite of doubt. There is still room for some doubt for, you know, my faithfulness towards God. You know, there might be doubts of, I'm not sure how this is going to work out. In sort of spiritually dry seasons, it seems, you know, there are times when I think, man, I feel rather distant in ways that, you know, one can sometimes feel distant from their spouse, something along those lines.
Yeah.
That doubt is still there, but I still live in such a way to be faithful to my spouse. The doubt is not something that is debilitating for me, at least. But it does make me, when used properly, I think it can make me, at least, and hopefully others, can give them an opportunity to stop and kind of reassess, what is it that isn't exactly clicking correctly? Am I missing something? Am I feeling a certain way? Why am I feeling that way? Those kinds of things. So to answer your question, to summarize very succinctly, no, I don't think faith and doubt are opposites, if understood in the way that I've just presented.
Yeah, there's a lot there that we're going to unpack throughout the rest of this episode. But first, Scott, did you want to weigh in on this? Do you think faith and doubt can coexist in any way, or are they
that
total opposites?
That's not exactly a yes or no answer, because I believe you need a certain amount of doubt I think that's what can make faith stronger is, you know, not just, that's where I think if you just go by faith and you never doubt anything, then I think you're creeping into zealot territory. You know, I think you need to have a little bit of, really, is this, you know, like maybe question a little bit, not to the point where you don't believe in anything, but just to say, just, you know, doubt can, I think, sometimes be healthy, if you will. Yes.
Yeah, it can temper an overzealous spirit, I think. It can make you more charitable toward people who don't see things the same way as you. It can give you a measure of humility, a measure of grace. I think that's certainly true. And I think we find examples of that in Scripture. And this is why I find this so powerful. You know, even a great hero that we love and respect, like Han Solo, he was in it for the money and then is transformed slowly through people who believed in him and saw something in him and was slowly exposed to the Force, right? In the spiritual analogy. And he was believed in by people who were patient with him. Leia continually is saying, like, we need you. The rebellion needs you. And he's like, no, you need me, baby. And he's like, no, no, no. She says, the rebellion needs you, right? You're useful. You have a purpose in this larger scheme of events. In other words, the Force has a purpose for you. And he doesn't see it that way. Nevertheless, they stick with him. I want to look at a couple of these stories that demonstrate this relationship between faith and doubt in the Bible. And I think give us a really different perspective than this black and white, faith is the opposite of doubt. Now, the first of these comes in Mark chapter 9. As you're turning there, I want to say, you know, in my experience, I totally lost my faith for the most part. Just, you know, 5-6 years ago after my mother died tragically, I immediately was supposed to be taking on a new ministry role. I mean, she died 2 weeks before we moved across the country. And I didn't believe anymore. I was so totally lost and kept showing up to church and saying the things I knew how to say, preaching from the Word, because I believe God had something to say, even if I felt a little bit off. I had faith that my faith would return, but I didn't have faith in God in that moment. And so for me, it was a year, 2 year journey to coming back to a place where I could say, where I could pray again, where I could pray with faith. I could put words in, with an amen on the end for a couple of years, but it wasn't the same as praying with faith, praying with certainty that God was listening, that God was with me. And so for me, these were some really formative texts in my own personal journey. And I think you are right, Scott. For me personally, my faith is so much stronger than it was. And it's so different, too. In some ways, it's weaker, but overall, it's stronger. And so it's like I don't know, like a piece of metal that's been broken and then welded, welded back together. So at that seam, it's stronger, but it doesn't look as seamless as it once did, right? So Kevin, tell people about this first story in Mark chapter 9. There's a hinge point in verse 24, but set the stage for us. Lead us up to that.
Yeah. So Jesus and his disciples are, I mean, they're doing their thing. They, you know, they're around with people, and then disciples come up to him and they say, a man comes up to Jesus and the disciples and they say, "Hey, you know, I brought my son to your disciples because he is suffering from a demon possession, and the demon is physically abusing my son." Your disciples weren't able to drive him out. And Jesus, you know, chastises the disciples, which seems kind of harsh, but in Jesus' mind, they should be adequately prepared for this. And so it was kind of surprising for them, but then the demon attacks the son at that moment, and Jesus says, "How long has he been like this?" And the father says, "It's, you know, basically from childhood." And the father asks this great line, "But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." And Jesus responds, "If you can."
I kind of hear it this way. If you can? No, it's hard to know the inflection there. Is the inflection in the Greek canon?
Right, yeah. Yeah, not in the manuscripts I've seen. But then he says, everything is possible for him who believes.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. Like, it seems like Jesus is really banking on, you know, belief is an important factor here. And the man says, Mark says, immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe, help my unbelief. And then Jesus does eventually cast the demon out of the boy.
That, for me, is one of my guiding prayers in my life. I believe. And I think that's an important thing for us as Christians to learn how to do, is to confess our belief and to not take it for granted and to reaffirm and hear ourselves reaffirm to God and to one another, to hear other Christians in corporate worship say, we believe. And to then articulate those beliefs. In Churches of Christ, in our fellowship, we are traditionally anti-creedal. We don't have these statements of faith that we affirm corporately in our worship. However, there's value in that. And maybe it's we sing the creeds. Maybe our words of affirmation come out in our worship rather than in recitation. And so we recite our creeds in four-part harmony. Hey, whatever it takes, though, it is helpful to hear yourself vocalize, to hear others vocalize what exactly we believe concerning God and salvation and spirituality. On the one hand, we are forgetful people. On the other hand, those words mean something, and God does something when these words are spoken. And so this, for me personally, has been a real guiding light to say, I believe. But I love that his prayer doesn't stop there, don't you? What he says to Jesus is not just, I believe. I mean, that would be a perfectly good thing to say in verse 24, but that's not the entirety of verse 24. He says, help my unbelief. So right there in this story, we find an example of faith and doubt coexisting and intermingling, and this was enough for Jesus. This was enough for Jesus. It's interesting, of course, that in the very next... You know, in the ESV that I'm looking at tonight, it's not even subdivided out of the end of this story. We find the disciples then at the end of this in verses 28 and 29 saying, we couldn't cast out the demon. What's up with this, Jesus? You got the lowdown on this particular type of demon, like they want some kind of lesson in demonology. And Jesus says this type couldn't come out by anything other than prayer. In other words... Did you stop and talk to God about this problem, or did you try to accomplish it on your own? Which is another good example of what you were talking about earlier with the fact that faith is demonstrated in action. It's not just about what's up in our head, but it is demonstrated in how we live our life. It's demonstrated in action.
Yeah.
Scott, did you want to chime in on this one? How important do you think is this father's statement of faith and his statement of doubt, both in the same sentence?
I don't really know if it's faith if you see somebody do something. You know, if I tell you a story about something and then you believe that's true, that's my more opinion of faith instead of you being the actual witness. You know, does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, that goes into our next story that we're going to look at in a minute with Thomas, who wants
which is kind of proof. What leads me right there.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know. Thomas being, he's a disciple, followed Jesus all the way, but he's like, I still don't believe you guys. I know I've seen these things, but I still don't believe you guys until I see it with my own very eyes. And Jesus had to come to him for him to believe that. And so that's, I don't consider, not trying to be too harsh on Thomas here, but I don't consider that faith. You know, that's, okay, I'll only believe what you tell me. And that you show me, and you have to, I think you have to put your trust in things you can't see sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that's the affirmation that's made there in John 20. Blessed are those who, what is it? You've seen, I'm looking it up here.
You've seen and believe. Blessed are those who have not seen.
I've got that quote in my head, but it's getting late over here on the East Coast, so you've got that 1 hour time difference.
I'm an hour ahead, so
his memory's a little fresher.
I'm a little fresher.
And I think there's a fine line, too, also between, like I was saying earlier, blind faith of believing everything without any kind of proof. There is a fine line to some of these things as well. You have to have your trust in people who you may have had it. Like in Thomas's case, I think it would have been easier to believe because you've been around these people. You've seen these, I'm going to put in quotation figures, miracles and things. And you've heard all these stories already, and he still has a hard time believing in these things, you know. So it, like, there's a certain point where if you've lived it, then it makes it easier to believe some other, if someone tells you something that happens.
Right. One of the things I love about Thomas's story is not so much what his story says about faith as much as what his story says about doubt. Now, we call him Doubting Thomas, even though he already has a nickname in the Bible. I mean, his nickname is Didymus because he's the twin. And we see that nickname. It's right there in the text. And we say, nope, we got a better nickname, Doubting Thomas. Poor Thomas. I mean, what if he had a hobby? What if he was crocheting Thomas and we've totally just blanket statement made him a doubter about everything?
We don't get to choose our nicknames.
That's true. Do you have a nickname, Scott?
It's really self-aggrandizing. Yes. When you do choose your own nickname.
Do you have a nickname, Scott?
For a long time, I was known as Wolfie because in my youth, I've always had facial hair and so this, but in my youth, I had long hair as well. So I was. It started off as the Wolf Man, and then I got twisted over into Wolfie.
That's cool. Wolfie. I've got a friend who's a youth minister named Wolfie. I mean, his name is Josh, but yeah, we call him Wolfie. Well, Thomas, his nickname in the Bible is Twin, right? It's in John 20, verse 24, which makes me wonder, where is Thomas's other twin in all of this story? Is he a believer? Or she? I guess it could be, is it fraternal? Is that what it's called if you're not paternal?
Correct. Yeah. If you're not identical.
Fraternal. Sure. In this particular instance, though, we make him Doubting Thomas. But what I love about Thomas in this story is actually the way that he exercises his doubt in community. So, yeah, you're making a great point, Scott, that Thomas has to see in order to believe. For us, it's a different story. It takes a greater measure of faith to trust and to believe without these visual confirmations. However, I love this story for what it shows us about how Thomas handles his doubt in community. Now, Kevin, I know that Scott has heard me talk about this at least two or three times. So I want to know, though, if you particularly have ever noticed this in the text. Where is Thomas in verse 24? In John 20, 24, where is Thomas?
All right, let me get there. I was still back in Mark, in case we needed it.
No, Mark's out the window.
We're done with you, Mark. He was not with the disciples when
Jesus came. He's not with the disciples when Jesus first appeared to them in his resurrected body, right? But then, look, two verses later, where is Thomas then?
He was with them at that point, yeah.
So 8 days later... Yeah. He is still with the believing disciples. Thomas has already expressed his doubt in verse 25. So, but in verse 24, he's not with the disciples when they see the resurrected Jesus. Kind of a big day to sleep in, Thomas. Way to go. They've been through a lot, though. I mean, this is Sunday after Jesus died on a Friday. I've got my timeline right here. So.
Me too.
That's true. I mean, I didn't want to get out of bed after my mom died. So that's a good point. But hey, kind of a big deal, Thomas. He missed it. And then in verse 25, he makes his statement of disbelief, right? They say in their creed, right, their statement of faith, we have seen the Lord. And then he says, unless I see... He sounds like a real Bostonian here, doesn't he, Scott?
Yes.
I gotta see it to believe it. I won't believe it unless I see it, right? Unless I see hands with the mark of the nails and place my finger in the mark of the nails and place my hand into his side. There's three qualifiers there. I mean, that's a lot. He's asking for very concrete evidence. I will never believe. And that The Greek there is emphatic. I know that because of Kevin. Okay. I will never believe. 8 days later, though, verse 26, his disciples were inside again. Those are the believers, those who had seen the resurrected Lord, and Thomas was with them. So think about this. Your hopes and dreams are crushed. You've lost everything. You think your best friends have gone crazy and have either invented a conspiracy in order to punk you or to save face, and you still hang out with them. You stay plugged into your community. How does this show what a person can do if they find themselves experiencing an unexpected season of doubt? What does Thomas's story show about what you can do with your doubt?
To me, it's he wants to believe. But there's something in him that, maybe this is the point of the loss was so great, he can't bring himself to believe that this miracle happened.
Maybe that could be
part of what it is. And then maybe this is kind of also how he's getting through all this stuff is, I need to be with people, who've gone on a lot of these journeys together and to get through this. And I think that's part of the reason in my head canon here, this is kind of the reason why he's still there is he's not ready to throw in the towel on everything and just say, forget you guys. I'm going off my own direction now. He's like, I still need this.
He just wants more evidence.
I'm still with you. I just don't believe this one particular pinpoint thing.
Sure. Kind of a big pinpoint, I see what you mean. Kevin?
Yeah. It's like he's almost saying, don't give me this false hope of something that is so beautiful. So incredible. I've had enough friends who have had miscarriages and had problems conceiving. Before I got married, and before my friends started all getting married and having kids, I just never knew how common it was for people to have trouble with to have fertility issues. I had no conception because I was never around people who talked about it very much. And no one I knew had. But it could be like a family member who found out while I was at grad school there in Memphis. I think maybe a year or two before Jared showed up, I was a family member who had. They were expecting their first, and then they found out that the child had, if I'm remembering everything correctly, because it was almost about 8 years ago, trisomy 13, which causes multiple and complex organ defects, and it was just a very, very tragic, absolute confident that that they would lose the baby. And how terrible, right? How terrible would it have been for someone to give them a false hope? Because the diagnosis was there, multiple doctors, his family members, a nurse, so she knows how to read the literature. She knows statistics for all this kind of stuff. I mean, we were all praying for miracles, but we also know that if a miracle doesn't happen, we know what will happen. And I can almost hear the same desperation in Thomas's voice to his friends here. Don't give me this false hope. I'm not capable of handling, another setback if you're wrong for something so beautiful as what you're trying to tell me about the resurrection.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I really find a lot of value in that idea that he stays plugged in with them. He stays with his community. I think what we often do is, I lose faith, I quit church. And so we cut ourselves off from that support system that believes in us and that we found value in for so long, for so many reasons beyond just the doctrine that's taught. And so I've seen many Christians go through periods like this where they not just doubt, but don't even consider themselves Christians anymore. And yet I've seen those who have divorced themselves from the faith. I've seen those who have stayed plugged in with the community. And I've seen people be able to pull through in incredible, wonderful ways because, like Thomas, they stayed there 8 days later when the disciples are still meeting and Jesus shows up again. There's a lot of value in staying plugged into the community. Keep singing those songs. Keep listening to those words of faith being sung by your brothers and sisters. And continue to ask good questions. Ask tough questions. God can handle your questions. I just finished teaching on the book of Psalms. If there's one thing that's clear in Psalms, it's that God can handle your complaints. God can handle your doubts. And God is there in the times when you don't think that he is. Well, there's one more good story I want us to just spend a minute on, and that's actually the story of the people who were closest to Jesus, closer even than Thomas, right? There's this one little curious verse in John chapter 7 that indicates that even Jesus' mother and brothers didn't believe in him. You ever seen this one, Scott? It's odd. It's unusual.
I remember you have preached about this a couple times, I think. And I always find it, I always find it like your sibling would, that they wouldn't believe you, and they wouldn't believe that you're the special one, you know. So
and we get some other instances, little clues that are similar to this. In Mark chapter 3, for example, we find his family, quote unquote, his family, trying to get Jesus to quit saying some crazy things. They come out and they try to hush him up. In this particular instance, though, in John 7, it says even his brothers, his mother and brothers, didn't believe in him. We think about Jesus, you know, we think about Mary in particular as being one of the great beacons of faith. But that's not to say she couldn't have experienced doubt. Jesus' brothers, we talked about this in the resurrection episode. James and his journey of faith in particular, going from a skeptic to one of the great leaders in the early church, leading the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15. And Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong here, but doesn't John the Baptist also experience a period of doubt?
He does send some of his followers to question in like an interrogation sort of sense, but they, for clarification, like, hey, are you really the guy? Well, I was pretty sure you are, but, you know, languishing away in my prison cell here, I'm curious.
Yeah, it looks like.
You know, and are you actually what I was hoping
like this
for?
Is in Matthew 11 and Luke chapter 7, if you're wanting more information there. John the Baptist sends messengers to Jesus from prison. John, whose life is on the line, kind of has invested a lot here. He's got a lot riding on Jesus, and he's like, are you sure? Can you just, like, give me some proof? So even these great beacons of our faith, our great heroes, they went through seasons of mistrust. And nevertheless, God's faithfulness, we think about our own faithfulness, but it's God's faithfulness that sees them through. There's a lot into the story of Han Solo when we consider it from a Christian perspective, isn't there? A lot more than just ancient religions and I've messed the
Hokey religions, yeah, there it and is. Ancient weapons.
I think.
Yeah. Well, where else could it? Well, go ahead,
say,
Scott.
And when you consider the story of how, you know, growing up on the streets, having to hustle and make his own way and try and, you know, find what his quote path would be or you know, whatever crew he's going to be running with and just trying to make it by day to day, you know, on his own wits, that you could see where he would be like, no one's helped me. There's been nothing out there that is, you know, that has helped me. I've had to do all this on my own, you know, so you can kind of see where maybe his doubt would start from in believing that, oh, there's this, you know, and that could lead to be the reason why he doesn't even understand what it is. You know.
Yeah, and I would argue that that's actually a form of faith. It's just misplaced faith. It's faith in oneself. Famously, Palpatine says to Luke that his faith in his friends is his downfall. It's going to be the end of him. It's his faith in his friends. And so we can have a well-placed faith, well-meaning faith that's misplaced. And so I wonder if, with hindsight, Han could look back at his life and realize that it was the Force that had seen him through all along, and in the form of his friends from time to time, in the form of a garbage-looking spaceship at other times, the Force intervenes and intercedes and carried him through to where he ended up later in his life, able to mentor this next generation. Well, we've talked about a lot tonight, but I wonder, where could a person look if they wanted to go deeper on this topic? First, let's think the galaxy far, far away. What else in the story of Han? What else in the story of faith and doubt and these archetypes of skeptic and believer? Where else should a person look? Kevin, let's start with you.
In the galaxy far, far away? It is always worth checking for people and people who are close to the events at hand. That's actually one of the criteria that led to the four Gospels that we have being ones where folks said, yeah, historically we as Christians have recognized that these particular writings have a close connection, either someone who followed Jesus or someone who was very closely connected to the people who followed Jesus. Apostolicity is the $10 word for that criteria. You know, you have these folks like Leia, who shows up in the sequel trilogy. You get to Luke. He comes and goes, right?
Yeah, he kind of loses his faith, too. We haven't even talked about him.
Right, but, you know,
He very much comes across as that disenfranchised, almost like a seminary student who loses their faith along the way. He's like, he knows too much. Yeah. I've learned the dark side about the Jedi.
Yeah.
He's done too much deconstructing.
But it is those people that one can turn to be in relationship with, to see how they've carried themselves. Leia's really just a great example of that through the sequel trilogy.
Her resilience is really contrasted with Han's disenfranchisement, or with Luke's disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Good. I'd like to recommend Rogue One, as we talked about earlier. I think that this wasn't even on my list before we started tonight, but the Chirrut and Baze's story of faith and friendship. You know, staying plugged in, Baze stays plugged in, like Thomas, to Chirrut. He stays by his side even after he seems to have lost his faith in the Force and regains it. That's beautiful. I'm going to have to rewatch that. It's been a while for me. One other thing I want to recommend, I always got to have my expanded universe pick. I'd like to recommend a horror book called Death Troopers. Scott, I know you like horror. This might be one worth picking up. Death Troopers was written to explain that little sentence from A New Hope that we talked about earlier. I've flown from one side of this galaxy to the other. I've seen a lot of strange stuff. And so this is a story of what the strange stuff might have been. Han and Chewie end up on a Star Destroyer full of zombie stormtroopers. And, oh man, is it excellent. It's scary, though. I mean, it'll make your skin crawl. I was listening to the audiobook on it a few years ago, and somebody like snuck up on me from behind. They didn't mean to. They didn't know I was listening to an audiobook. I was doing yard work. I screamed bloody murder. Like, the whole town heard. It was amazing.
That is awesome.
Have you heard of this?
I've heard of Death Troopers before. Yes, and I knew it's a zombie story and things of that nature. So as I slowly work my way into the book part of the Star Wars universe, that's definitely one of the ones.
Oh yeah, there's a lot.
That's definitely one of the ones on the list.
Cool. Good. Well, how about in the Bible? Anything else that would be worth further exploring on this topic? We've mentioned three different texts. We mentioned Mark 9:14-29, the story of the faithful father. We looked at John 20:24-29, the story of doubting Thomas. And then also this little text in John 7:5, where even Jesus' family doubts him. Anything else on the subject of faith and doubt, skepticism, belief?
I would want to, again, encourage the people kind enough to listen to us to start thinking about faithfulness and fidelity and allegiance when they see the New Testament use the word faith. That faith is not a bad translation for it, but I think it's important to see that that has a much, it's much more like an iceberg, right? Yeah, you know, we may see, kind of perceive the top part of it, but there's really a lot more going on than only, you know, in sort of intellectual affirmation.
Yeah.
That's that plus, you know, fidelity, faithfulness, allegiance, things like that.
Good. Yeah, it's one of those words that we use in a religious context, and it's taken on a whole life of its own. In some ways, we've lost what its actual meaning is. You say, well, what is faith? Oh, yeah, you know, it's that thing. You either got it or you don't. End of story. Well, that does it for this week. This has been a blast. Thanks, guys, for spending your evening with me. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Hyperspace Theology. If you'd like to get in touch with us, if you have doubts and you want to explore them, you need somebody to listen, you have questions about your faith, or if you think we've totally missed it and want to lay the record straight, hey, you can get in touch with us at hyperspace_theology on Instagram, or you can email us, hyperspacetheology@gmail.com. Now, before we close out the show, Kevin, what's going on with Faith in the Folds? You say you've got a big day coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, at the time of our recording tonight, I've got two interviews tomorrow. One is about church involvement in the community. And the other one is from a minister friend who, looking back on his 20s and 30s, at the time of his 40th birthday from a few weeks ago, he reflected on that time and has got five things that he wants to share. Make a great podcast episode to kind of hash through some of that stuff. And so that's coming ahead for interviews that I've got on the books for things that are already coming. I've got part two of The College Christian with a friend and adjunct professor of counseling and a licensed professional counselor, Stephanie O'Brien from Harding University. She'll be talking about spiritual challenges that Christians in college face and some really great stuff. There's some tough stuff too, but some really great stuff to talk about there. And then one with retiring Dean of Harding School of Theology and Professor of New Testament, Dr. Alan
Black. No way,
Black,
awesome.
Venerable. Dr. Alan Black did an interview with him last week, and that'll debut probably coming out soon. So looking at some cool things coming up soon.
I wonder if I give him a good five-star rating on his podcast appearance, he'll give me better grades when I've got him next spring for class. Let's hope so. Well, that does it for this week. God bless everybody. And may the force be with you.